Blog Talk Radio.
The Senate will come to order.
Are you ready?
Yeah!
I want to know, is everybody ready?
Yeah!
All right, here we go. Everybody, get on up and do your stuff. Did you hear what I say? I said everybody, get on up and do your stuff. You better get up. Don't be so rough, but you got to be tough when you do your stuff. Hey!
Hey, everybody. Happy Monday. Welcome to Congress College. My name is Elizabeth Crist, and I want to thank you in advance for spending your Monday with us. Your precious 30 minutes on Monday and Friday to learn and keep up with all things Congress. If you guessed it, Congress College, that's what we are all about. We talk about Congress actually twice weekly. On the Monday show, which of course is the show you're listening to right now, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, this is when we outline the week in Congress and we talk about literally what bills will be coming up in the Senate of the United States and in the House of Representatives. And then on the Friday show, which is same time slot, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, on Friday show, we recap the week and we talk about what actually got done. What did the Senate of the United States end up doing? What did the House of Representatives end up doing? You know, I say this all the time. I do the show so people can answer this really, really simple question after you've listened to a Monday and a Friday show, and that is, were you represented well in Washington, D.C. for the week? Because let's think about it. Those guys and gals in the Senate, those guys and gals in the House of Representatives, they're representing you. They're representing me. They're speaking for us. So don't you think we should at least have a general idea what they're up to? Well, that's my view, and that's the reason I do the show. Another reason is to familiarize folks with the free website, gradegov.com. And, of course, gradegov.com lets you grade. Guess what? Lets you grade a member of Congress. Yep, you can grade your member of Congress, or you can grade somebody. Maybe somebody you just learned about. Maybe it's somebody, I don't know, maybe you just heard about them, and you want to give them an A, or maybe you want to give them an F. And, of course, the grades we're talking about are the A, B, C, D, or F, just like the grades we got in school. The site will prompt you to pick who you want to grade, and then choose the letter grade you want to give that person, and then the site will auto-prompt you to write a letter explaining why you gave the grade. And then once you, I always recommend this, once you check your spelling and then click send, you've just graded a member of Congress and written him or her a letter, and folks, they do see it. They do see it on gradegov.com. They see it in their email, in their inbox, because gradegov.com is diligent on keeping up with personal email accounts in all 535 member of Congress's offices. So they see it. They see the letter, they see the grade, and folks, they do. They pop over to gradegov.com to find out what kind of letter grade they're getting from you or I. The site will break it down into a national grade and then a district grade. So tell your friends and tell your family about gradegov.com. I would really, really appreciate it. All right, as always, we start out with the House or the Senate of the United States. Let's start this week by what's going on with the House of Representatives. Well, a couple of things. On the floor, they're going to do some banking bills. One of them is investor clarity and bank parity. You know, after the Dodd-Frank total takeover of the banking industry, basically, small community banks have all but gone extinct because the Dodd-Frank legislation, named after Senator Chris Dodd and Barney Frank, the congressman from Massachusetts, once that bill finally got into place, once most of the regulations were written, and there's still some that have not been written, they're still writing them, there was, at one point I lost count, 700 and some major banking regulations that were going to be put in place. Small banks, you know what, folks? They didn't have the money to hire a battery of lawyers, a team of lawyers to keep up with all the regulations. So basically, the Dodd-Frank, too big to fail, financial modernization legislation, put the smaller banks out of business. So the House is doing some small banking bills, investor clarity and bank parity, fair access to investor research. Then they're doing some flood insurance, marketing, and parity. And then they're going to start marking up. This is a big deal, folks. The defense authorization bill. The House of Representatives will start marking up the draft, and they'll debate it in the committee starting Wednesday. This is in the House Armed Services Committee. And they're talking about increasing defense systems in military buys, all the way from jets to cargo planes to ships. The chairman of the Armed Services Committee, Mac Thornberry, he's proposed a defense bill that is $610 billion. That's a lot of money, folks. $610 billion. $574 billion of it will go to base requirements. How about funding the war? $23 billion. How about $35 billion? The contingency operations, and that's the small amount of folks going to end the war in Iraq. Here's the comparison, folks. The president requested $5 billion for the war fund. $5 billion versus $35 billion. So the defense bill is spending a lot of money, but most people will say very needed, very, very needed. The money is very needed. What do you think about North Korea? You think the defense budget should be beefed up a little bit when we read that North Korea tested a submarine-launched missile over the weekend? And they say it was partially successful. This is from a Pentagon official. I'm quoting now. This is something that started as a joke. Again, I'm quoting a Pentagon official, but has turned into something very serious. This official spoke on the condition of anonymity. He said he's not authorized to discuss it, but basically he says it's something very serious. North Korea, as we know, has been working to try to develop the capability to launch a missile from submarines. And remember last year they said they had done it and it turned out to be a fake. Well, this time the Pentagon said they did it. They actually shot a KN-11 missile off of a submarine. It only traveled 20 miles, but they actually did it. So you think maybe we should start beefing up the defense budget? Well, at least that's what House Republicans are saying, and they'll work on that this week, Wednesday to start out with. We'll probably talk a little bit more about it on Friday's show. And then how about let's go over to the Senate for a minute. The Senate is working on the Energy Security and Water Infrastructure Bill. This is the first of the appropriations bills. This is the Energy and Water Appropriations Bill. And Senator McConnell said this is a great kickoff to the appropriations process. It's the first of the 12 appropriations bills. I'm going to quote Senator McConnell. I share Senator Mikulski's sentiment that it's been good to see colleagues across the aisle express an interest in working cooperatively in this appropriation season, because we know continued cooperation will be essential to a successful appropriations process. And again, I'm quoting Senator McConnell. We've seen plenty of positive signs in the Appropriations Committee already. The committee has already approved a third of the 12 funding bills on a bipartisan basis. With continued cooperation, we'll have an opportunity to pass the first of these bills on the floor this week. And, of course, the energy bill deals with water infrastructure and security, reduce wasteful spending, and stuff like priorities of public safety when it comes to waterways infrastructure. It will impact all 50 states. And again, quoting the Senate Majority Leader, this is an excellent kickoff to the appropriations season. You know, Speaker Ryan had promised that the Senate and the House would do the 12 individual appropriations bills separately on the floor of the House, separately on the floor of the Senate. Why do you care? Why do we care? Why did the general public care? Because our member of Congress, whether it's a senator or a House member, he or she should have the opportunity to debate, to offer amendments. What if your state, what if your district was having a horrible issue with something? And the federal government, maybe the Agriculture Department, could remedy it. Maybe the maybe it's a problem with NASA, if you live on the space coast of NASA, I should say. Maybe that could be remedied by an amendment to an appropriations bill. It can't be remedied, folks, if the House and the Senate don't do the individual appropriations bills. It can't be remedied if the only way they do the funding of the federal government through the appropriations process is to do one big, giant omnibus appropriations bill like they've been doing over the past, 10 years. Because of the Senate Democrats' control, because of the House Democrat control under Nancy Pelosi, they started a trend in which the Senate and the House don't do the bills individually. They do one giant appropriations bill. They do it at the last minute. So there's panic. There's crisis management. Will the government have a shutdown? Will there be a shutdown of the federal government? All of that panic mode occurs. And then they end up passing it at the 11th hour. But your member of the House, your member of the Senate, he or she didn't get a chance to participate hardly at all. They could basically only vote yes or no. So you want them to do the individual appropriations bills, folks. You really do. You really do. All right, let's stay with the Senate for a minute. You know, there are 24 Senate Democrats and Senate Republicans up for reelection versus only 10 Senate Democrats. Senator McConnell is nervous, folks. Donald Trump has been sending a team of advisors into the Senate, over to the House of Representatives to talk to Senate Republicans about what he might do if he were president. Senator McConnell is almost to the point, let's just get it over with. Let's get the nomination process over with, because I got 24 Senate Republicans up for reelection, and almost all of them are nervous. They are nervous as a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs. Think of that visual. A long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs. They're nervous, folks. But, you know, there's 3 Senate Democrat seats out of the 10 that maybe have some chance of a possible Republican pickup. Colorado is one. You've got Senator Michael Bennett trying to be reelected. And there's a new poll out in Colorado that say only 32% of voters in the state want him to be their senator again next year. In Nevada, that's the seat being vacated by the former majority leader, Harry Reid. He handpicked Catherine Cortez Masto. She's only polling at 41%. And, you know, Washington State, Patty Murray, who is the incumbent senator, Democratic senator, she is below 50% in her approval rating. Patty Murray first won as a mom, and her theme was, I'm just a mom in tennis shoes. Just a mom in tennis shoes. Well, she's polling below 50%. So maybe there is a way that the Senate Republicans could hold on, but folks, 24 Senate Republican seats versus 10 Senate Democrat seats, you've got some nervous people. And you know, all the oxygen is being sent towards the presidential. All of it. All the media. We're going to talk about the media taking over the presidential, especially the Republican presidential, in a few minutes. But let's flip to some polls. The latest poll shows Trump up in California 15 points over Cruz. Now, that primary is in June, but here's another one. The GOP primary turnout has been up 8.7 million votes. That's more than 60% versus 2012. Why do you think? Do you think that Trump is actually leading a referendum? Listen to Paul Manafort. He is Donald Trump's new campaign guy, one of his top campaign guys. He's going to talk for this a little over 2 minutes about the convention. This was right after the New York win last Tuesday. Take a listen.
With reaction, Donald Trump's convention manager, Paul Manafort. Paul, good to see you. How are you?
Good, Sean. Very happy.
What do you think the final delegate count is for Mr. Trump tonight and his victory?
Well, I'm not sure yet, but still counting a couple of congressional districts. But we will top out over 90 delegates tonight.
So it's almost a clean sweep.
At least 90 out of 95 and maybe a few more.
All right, big night. All right, let's talk about – there was an article in Real Clear Politics today. We've been following – for example, states that we thought were long done and finished and over, following states like South Carolina, Georgia, other places. And there seems to be the courting of the delegates to, on a second ballot, to switch to another candidate. How big an issue is that in your mind?
There's not going to be a second ballot, so there's not an issue.
And you're convinced?
We have several ways to get to 1237 by early June. And today was a giant step forward. We think we're going to have another great week next week. But more importantly, what you saw, and you saw record turnout today in New York, and a record turnout with a primary that everybody knew Donald Trump was going to win. But
does it bother you when Real Clear Politics has an article out today that, quote, Cruz can come in dead last in Pennsylvania, which is a week from now, and still take more than half the delegates?
Cruz may take dead last in the vote, but he's not going to take half the delegates.
So you have no concern about that or any of the other states, or can you bring us inside how you get to 1237? I tried to get that out of you last week.
I could, and you're not going to get it out of me this time either. But I can tell you we've got several ways to get there. Today, you know, the 90-ish plus that we got today exceeded my base count in this state.
What about the Cruz campaign and Reince Priebus saying everybody knew the rules going in, and in states like Colorado, Wyoming, and other places, the campaign should have competed harder? What's your answer to that?
Donald Trump is not saying he didn't know the rules. He's saying the rules aren't fair, and the people, the voters, the Republicans who are in the independents who have participated, they don't understand the rules. Mm-hmm. So when they think they're voting for Donald Trump, and they're not getting the delegate support that because of the rules of the various states, Donald Trump's saying that's a rigged system. And he's not saying, and this has been confusion, he knows he can't change the rules this time. What he's saying, though, is it's a rigged political system, and he's going to change it when he's president and leader of the party.
Well, I think rules need to be changed. I think it's either a caucus or a primary.
Okay, so think about that for a minute. Is it rigged? Is there collusion? Well, we're going to talk about what Kasich and Cruz have put together in just a minute. But tomorrow's primaries, Pennsylvania, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Delaware, and Maryland. It's a total of 172 delegates. That's as many as in California. So, if Donald Trump does take the majority of those, Paul Manafort's predictions on how to get to 1237 before July in Cleveland, Ohio, the Republican convention, could come true. Absolutely could come true. You know, I talked about this and I teased the show out. The Republican presidential primary, all of it, has gotten more attention in the media than Bernie or Hillary. As a matter of fact, Hillary is getting a bunch of negatives. Is it because the Republican primary is more interesting? The candidates are more interesting? And the real question is, will it translate in November? Will it mean that more people will go to the polls in November and vote for Republicans? This is media analysis. Found that the biggest news outlets have published more negative stories about Hillary than any other presidential candidate, including Donald Trump. And this is going back as far as January of 2015. The study concluded by social media software analytic company it's called Crimson Hexagon, found that the media wrote the smallest portion of positive stories on her. Media Matters noted throughout the primary campaign, the coverage of Hillary Clinton has tended to focus on scandals like her private email system, while Republican counterparts have enjoyed positive characterizations. Clinton has gotten 40% negative stories. 40% of the stories have been negative on Hillary Clinton. And the next closest is Trump with about 35% of negative stories. Guess who gets the highest positive stories? Governor John Kasich. Governor John Kasich. So think about that. And then let's talk here for a second. Ted Cruz, his campaign concedes that Tuesday's primary for Pennsylvania, Connecticut, Delaware, Rhode Island will probably be losers for Cruz. This is Chad Sweet, who admitted that the biggest prize of it, Pennsylvania, will probably, quote, go to Trump. The best hope for Cruz, Sweet told members of Cruz's national security team on a conference call, was fair share. And then I'm going to quote him. We all knew all along that this particular stretch of states in the Northeast was going to be probably the low point for the campaign. This is Sweet saying this after last week's New York loss. I'm going to quote him again. We recognize it's going to be a tough stretch for us on Tuesday. We always anticipated that we would have a tough ride through this period. But it will likely go to Trump. We could still win our fair share. Donald Trump leads Cruz 19.5 points in the Real Clear Politics average in Pennsylvania. So why did they all of a sudden last night decide on a new Cruz-Kasich strategy? Take a listen to it for just a second, and then we're going to talk about it for a minute. This goes about 2 minutes.
Republican presidential candidates Ted Cruz and John Kasich have a new strategy for stopping Donald Trump, joining forces. In an unprecedented move, the two candidates announced they are divvying up the upcoming primary states to try to block the frontrunner's path to the GOP nomination. Top officials from the Cruz and Kasich campaigns announced the alliance in a pair of statements late Sunday night. Cruz campaign manager Jeff Rowe said, "Our campaign will focus its time and resources in Indiana, and in turn clear the path for Governor Kasich to compete in Oregon and New Mexico, and we would hope that allies of both campaigns would follow our lead."
There's no doubt that winning elections is better than losing elections, and so we're going to do everything possible to win here in Indiana.
The agreement comes as Mr. Trump is in the midst of a successful run of states. He won 89 of New York's 95 delegates on Tuesday and stands to carry all 5 northeastern states due to vote this week.
At some point, I'm going to be so presidential that you people will be so bored, and I'll come back as a presidential person, and instead of 10,000 people, I'll have about 150 people, and they'll say, "But boy, he really looks presidential."
Mr. Trump has branded the agreement as desperate. If it is successful, it stands to benefit both Mr. Cruz and Mr. Kasich. Mr. Cruz's campaign is now arranged around the idea that he can clinch the GOP nomination on a second or third ballot at the convention, once delegates bound to Mr. Trump on the first vote become free to vote how they wish. Mr. Kasich's hope is that not only does Mr. Trump fall short, but Mr. Cruz does too, and eventually Republican delegates choose him as the most electable candidate.
We're going to an open convention. I have been saying it for 2 months. People were saying he doesn't know what he's talking about. Well, it turns out I'm right.
Republican candidates need 1,237 delegates at the party convention to become the presidential nominee.
Well, all of that is to say the two of them have teamed up, and is it smart? Is it smart? I think it's a boneheaded idea. Remember what Paul Manafort said. He said, as long as the process isn't tainted, as long as it isn't corrupted, as long as people understand when they vote for their nominee, they get a vote for delegates. Well, here is Cruz and Kasich saying, oh, well, we're just going to split them up, as if they have power over everybody that votes. That's what it makes it sound like. It makes it sound like your vote doesn't count, that Kasich and Cruz control your vote. It plays into Trump's hands. Remember the adage. I see Andrea in the chat room. Hey, guys, he who defines first defines last. Donald Trump will continue the mantra. He will continue defining this as corrupt, as not correct, as collusion, as he said earlier, disenfranchised, not playing by the rules. Listen, he made a promise. Do you remember when he made this promise? This is about a minute.
Mr. Trump, my listeners tell me again and again they're worried that Hillary Clinton will win the White House because you run as an independent. Are you ready to reassure Republicans tonight that you will run as a Republican and abide by the decision of the Republicans?
I really am. I'll be honest. I really am. I mean, people have been putting me to test. I really am.
I could have won. Dr. Carson.
I've gained great respect for the Republican leadership. I've gained great respect for many, and I'm going to even say all, I mean, in different forms, for the people on the dais.
No,
in different forms. In different forms. But I have great respect for the people I've met through this process. I've never done this process before. I've never been a politician. I mean, for the last 6 months, I've been a politician. But I will tell you, I am totally committed to the Republican Party. I feel very honored to be the front runner. And I think I'll do very well if I'm chosen, if I'm so fortunate to be chosen. I think I'll do very well. Polls have come out recently say I would beat Hillary. I will do everything in my power to beat Hillary Clinton. I can promise you.
Now, remember, he said that after he decided that they were all going to play by the rules. If these things keep showing up, Cruz, Kasich team, where he thinks that it's collusion, I'm not going to say he's going to go back on that because I think he's too far ahead. I think he is the front runner. But he will say, that's why I was so reluctant. Remember, back in the beginning, I was so reluctant to say I wouldn't run as a third-party candidate because I wanted to make sure everybody was playing by the rules. This is what I meant. This is what I was afraid of. The rules would get all bent. He's going to use this. He's going to define them as not playing by the rules. Lying Ted is already lying Ted, according to Donald Trump. And he says it over and over and over again. Kasich has just put himself with Lion Ted. I don't know why you would have done it. I really honestly don't. All right, we're going to have to wrap up here in a minute. I always do the President's Daily Schedule. Before I do that, though, remember the President's trip to Cuba? Remember a couple of weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, he went to Cuba? And the administration made some kind of presumption that the Castro regime would start wanting to embrace capitalism. Well, chalk that up to another foreign policy bundle, because basically Castro has basically recently said the United States is the enemy and warned Cubans to remain vigilant against the U.S. All right, the President's daily schedule is basically he is leaving Germany and coming back. Today, he's actually here tonight about 7:10. He arrives at Andrews Air Force Base. He's been palling around with Andrea Merkel in Germany, and now he's back. All right, I thought this would be fun to play. We've got the theme song for The Price is Right. Let's make a deal, all of that. This is a little over.